Never read Requiem for a Dream. Never read
I
anything
can't
that guy's
imagine.
ever
I
written.
can't imagine.
It is really hard to read.
I would believe that.
That's one of the times it's like where the movie's better than the book. The book's good, but the movie's far, far better.
This is the Media Comedy Club podcast, Shane. We talk about TV here.
Sorry. Sorry. We definitely don't talk about books.
The following is a Media Comedy Club production.
Welcome back to the Media Comedy Club podcast, Silicon VP slash VPC slash whatever we end up calling this podcast series. It's still up in the air. Get your submissions in for what we should call it. We are discussing the latest episodes of Silicon Valley and Veep. I'm John Kissel, and with me tonight, as usual, are Shane Sentner.
Yo.
And Brian Hartman.
Hey, that's me.
I got to say, as we start off here, you have a very nice looking new screen on your computer.
Thank you. Thank you. I completely agree. The last time we were podcasting for Silicon VP, there was a giant spider web crack in the top of the screen.
It actually almost looked artistic, too.
A little, yeah. It was like bleeding into the bottom part of the screen. I don't know exactly what was happening there. Like the liquid crystal display was like just leaking into the bottom part of the screen, perhaps.
It kind of looked like Jesus. Yes.
Sure. Yeah. Well, I threw it away after I replaced it. So maybe there's some zealot digging through trash, working down at the
I think I saw
down at the landfill.
Like an older Hispanic woman. Is that?
Crossed herself.
Yes. Definitely Catholic.
Jesucristo. And now it's part of a shrine somewhere.
That's right.
Somewhere in Little Five Points.
And definitely not a shrine to MMC.
Definitely not.
if there was someone digging through the MMC trash, they'd just be the saddest person who ever existed.
You replaced a laptop screen?
Yeah. On his own.
Nice.
It was, I'd be fair, it was teamwork. I helped by sitting on his computer.
By providing the impetus for me to need to change it in the first place.
Pro tip for people out there, if you have a child, don't put a computer on any chairs.
I think that's called victim blaming, and I resent it.
Yeah. it's not even a victim. It's inevitable. Like, man, when you have an infant in your arms and you go down to sit, you just don't stop. There's no stopping. You just go.
I mean, some screws aren't in the exact right place as
right.
when I unscrewed them, but it's close enough.
I'm
and, like, the hinges are weird because I may have jiggled them out too aggressively, but
I'm pretty sure every time I've replaced something with electronics, I always have screws left over. Heck, even when I built a computer and I had to screw the motherboard into the case, I had four extra screws laying around, so that's all right.
You just chuck them into the back. Like, clearly these are supposed to be there. They'll get
some
there.
Of
They'll
them.
Find their way there.
I opened it up a couple weeks later, and, like, there was one or two that were just rattling around in there, so I just shook the computer until they fell out. And so, it's good now.
Okay, that's pretty much my strategy for electronic repair. Just shake. Just give it a vicious shake.
I wish you hadn't yelled, "Fuck you, Shane," so loudly the entire time.
I watched a guy on YouTube do it while I was screwing and unscrewing
things.
I wish
he hadn't yelled,
out.
"Fuck you, Shane," so loudly, too.
Shane's are famous laptop sitters and breakers. So, Silicon Valley. This episode is called Team Building Exercise. It starts immediately after the previous episode with Richard knocking on Gavin's door. Gavin is in the throes of his depression. That before Richard showed up was obviously anger, as much of Gavin's house has been destroyed and his furniture has been cracked into. This pitch goes pretty badly. Richard just kind of wants Gavin to sign away his rights to something and doesn't take into account how Gavin so obviously is feeling in this moment, which I think is okay. Like, Brian, you mentioned that Richard doesn't have a lot of social awareness. In the first
yeah,
place.
You talking about him going about his cell badly and being cruel. Richard doesn't know that. It's called the spectrum, John, if you're not aware.
We talked last week about feeling sympathy for Gavin. This was probably the first time I had ever felt sympathy for Gavin. It would have been very easy for Richard to commiserate, to frame this patent as Gavin getting something that he wants. And not just financially, because he clearly doesn't need it, instead of something that Richard wants. And this resolves itself quickly because once Richard makes his cell. Like, Gavin is an engineer. He appreciates math.
Makes like his cell on Gavin's large portrait, just yes. assuming that he can draw all over his paintings.
I mean, it's cracked. It's broken. It's off the wall. And this has the added benefit of being able to deal a serious blow to Hooli. I don't have a good sense of what Hooli does. Are they Google in the show? I've always been a little unclear on that. It seems like they have a lot of the infrastructure of the internet, the way they speak about it. But I don't know if that is a thing in the first place.
But the whole like server thing they're building is more like Amazon Web Services. They're kind of like a Google, Facebook, Amazon combination, I think.
Okay. Gotcha.
I think my guess is the writers are doing that on purpose, not to mirror some specific company.
Sure. I think it starts off as one thing, and then others using Hooli as just kind of a catch-all for tech, maybe. But I guess isn't Google that way at this point?
Yeah, like they have a life extension division now.
Yeah, let me look at my Google phone.
So we're revisiting last week also with our discussion about, is Silicon Valley cutting corners? Are they jumping back to square one? The show kind of anticipates this with Richard talking about how smartphones have revolutionized the ideas that Peter Gregory had like 20 or so years ago. But I don't know if that exactly hand waves away the problems that I had with it, because those smartphones were just as in existence when Richard and Peter Gregory first met each other. So I do still think it's a bit of a shortcut. I think it's a bit of an oversight. But here and there, they're moving forward with it. Gavin agrees. He signs the lease. He signs the patent. They go into business together. This is what the show is doing now, presumably for the rest of the season.
Yeah, I'm excited to see where they go. I miss Richard being a main character.
I think it is plainly obvious that it's just a matter of time until Gavin screws him out of his share of the business, as he is warned by Jared in particular, that if Gavin is given an inch, he'll take the proverbial mile.
Or is Richard going to start falling into what Gavin is?
Maybe. Yeah, that'd be interesting. Like, that's the most obvious scenario. It's obvious because it works. So if it does work, okay, that's fine. But throwing a wrench into the plot mechanics would, you know, that'd be welcome too. Yes, so Jared, he's worked with Gavin before. He wants to be by Richard's side. He's very skeptical of the staff that Gavin is trying to get Richard to hire, people that have previously worked with Gavin. And this leads to Jared getting back on his team, as well as getting Guilfoyle back on his team. Guilfoyle doesn't want to ask. He wants to be asked, so they have to go through the motions to get that to happen. So the old team gets back together.
They brought the spaces versus tabs thing up again.
They did. Yeah, a little throwaway.
That's nice.
And it wasn't even like, for Richard, it wasn't even a point of anything that would be debatable. It was just a matter of fact. Like, yeah.
Right. Yes, he's shown
his lead engineer.
He's shown getting along with this guy in the background. But as soon as the guy leaves, it's like, oh, he uses spaces, not tabs. Or tabs, not spaces. Yeah, I'm still unclear on the difference.
He might as well have been like, yes, he collects Nazi memorabilia in a very uncomfortable manner.
You don't understand the difference between tabs and spaces.
I guess.
Sure.
When you were writing papers, did you space five times or hit the tab key to start a paragraph?
Okay. You know, I used to do was two spaces after a sentence, and I've cut that out.
I still do two spaces after a sentence.
That's so inefficient. You would not get a job at Silicon Valley.
Well, the thing was, that's how we were taught, though.
It looks better, too.
No, you are all insane.
It used to be typewriter is how it was because of the way the font was, but now the fonts on computers are, it's made so that it doesn't look bad.
Oh, man. I remember being in middle school typing class, and the teacher said, you can use one or two. And I thought, well, why would you use two if you can just hit the space bar once?
So when I was, when I was elementary school, which is before, and like, so my ex-stepdad was like a big tech guy pretty early, like one of the first people who had the internet and type people, like he was all over it. So he taught us two spaces. for beyond space, because that's how it was. Mm-hmm. I mean, and that's what you're supposed to do back then. But now, everything's changed, which I've taught myself. I actually forced myself to stop doing that because a friend of mine who now writes for the AP, was like, "You gotta stop doing that, man. You're killing me."
Good for him.
Yeah.
When that's I post Jake S, when by I the way, post from reviews. Nerd Baseball.
Oh, okay. Yeah, good for him.
When I post reviews on the website, if someone sends them to me single spaced, I go back and double space those motherfuckers.
Wow,
that's a travesty. I'm good going to Lord. No space my entire next review and let you put son all the space.
Just
in
Cormac
there.
McCarthy style, no punctuation, run-ons upon run-ons upon run-ons. That would break my brain.
You give me something to do.
What else yeah, that's true enough. So elsewhere in the incubator, Dinesh is fully surrendering to Guilfoyle's paranoia about the hacker. He's saying things into microphones that she may or may not be listening through. He's taping up all his webcams. That's pretty much all that they have to do.
Can I interject that taping your webcam is actually a pretty good idea if you've got one? It's not hard to get into somebody's webcam and see what they're up to.
I was mocked the entire time during law school because of my old computer. I had it taped. But I also noticed I would do a hard reset on my computer, do a Control-Alt-Delete, and I'd see my webcam was up and running. So I'm like, that's I cannot weird. Have any dudes in India watching me in class not pay attention.
When I had my laptop open and I was looking at my the hardware of the webcam, I considered just ripping it out.
Oh, fuck. You know what? There's potentially a Russian stealing our podcast. And right now, because your webcam is not taped, and they're broadcasting live video feed in Russia right now, stealing our intellectual property.
They're super hard up for just any kind of economic activity. Like, this is generating some tiny amount of money by people clicking through our Amazon page. But
Svetlana, come in here. It's the boys again from Atlanta, Svetlana. They are doing the podcast.
What's that Russian website you see with all the dash cam videos? Is it like livestream.com or something?
Crazy. I assume it's called Crazy Ass Car Crashes because they're all coming from Russia. Watch this car weave through five semis.
And then this person pretend to get run over and then walk away when they see they have a dash cam.
Things are rough there. So, the last big chunk of this episode of Silicon Valley is that seafood continues to grow. Brian, you called it exactly more or less what was going to happen here.
I don't think I've ever been more proud of myself in terms of any of our podcasts than going on to talk about visual recognition being used to filter the internet. Like, when that came up, I thought, holy cow, I almost predicted this right on the nose.
I mean, I'll let you take over the exposition for this part.
For seafood?
Sure.
So, what's his name? Big Head. What's his real name?
No, it's not.
You should. All right. I wasn't
ready. Get a name right. Just took him a second.
It wasn't. It was no Jin Yang, not Big Head. Not
even right. Never mind. Okay. Back to
okay. Kissel. So no.
You let me use that white guy with that Chinese guy. Yes. This is how we're starting.
All right, so Jin Yang puts together his app, and they're going to do the demo of it. And so he takes a picture of a hot dog, and it works. And then I don't remember the next food that they're going to take a picture of. But they go to take a picture of it, and instead of hot dog, it simply says not hot dog. So he's created a binary result, either hot dog or not hot dog.
Did that happen because that was just the first thing he scanned with the phone, or did he program it like that? Like, if it was pizza, would it be pizza and not pizza?
No, he chose hot dog, not hot dog.
Okay.
That just happened. It
did. That was just the spiteful.
That was the food he chose. Because, what do you have to, you got to scrub the internet for a bunch of pictures. So you tell the computer, all of these things are hot dogs. And then and then it learns what a hot dog is. And tries to predict more hot dogs. So you have to do that with each food. And so all he did was hot dogs.
Okay. Okay, gotcha.
So I was playing with the app today, And so far, it's 2 for 2, though I don't have hot dogs in my house to take a picture of, which I'm kind of sad about.
Time for a trip to the supermarket.
I was just thinking that. Like, I should have stopped by the gas station and taken a picture of the hot dog. Yeah,
and then just thrown it out the window on the drive home.
No, yeah, I was thinking, like, on the roller, just at the store. I don't actually want to buy the hot dog.
So, Shaq, you have 2 children and no hot dogs. How does this work?
Oh, my kids ate sausage, kale chips, and sweet potatoes for dinner tonight.
Oh, nice. My kid was dipping his index finger into ketchup and eating it.
The finger or the ketchup?
Unclear. Unclear. He's just going for it. But he also tried my LaCroix this afternoon. I was like, oh, he's no way he's going to like this. He's like, no, I like that. So it's one less thing that I get to enjoy in my life now.
We had along those lines that at New Year's we had sparkling grape juice for the kids to drink.
Sure.
And so we had my 4-year-old, one of her friends, and then my son, who was less than 2 at the time. And the 4-year-olds tried the sparkling grape juice and were just like, thought it was kind of gross, too carbonated. My son chugged his and then started asking everyone for more. So he's probably going to party pretty hard, and I'm terrified.
Well, so when we were younger, my dad, of course, not as young as our toddlers are, but a little older, my dad would let us try his beer knowing we'd hate it. But my cousin Corey loved it. So he would just like his dad would turn around, and all of a sudden, like a half a beer was gone or a full beer was gone.
So what's Corey up to now?
He got a liver transplant at 25.
Corey.
He's yellow 3/4 of the day.
He's not listening to this. He's great. He is a great guy.
So after the hot dog, not a hot dog app is deemed to be a success for what it is, Ehrlich sees the writing on the wall. This is not what Lori wanted. This is not what Monica wanted. So he spends the seed money on his palapa, which I'm still unclear on what that is, but he's very excited about it.
Isn't it just like a big hut?
It seems like a lean-to, maybe. Hut. I don't know. Shane's looking up a picture. He's checking out the website. Palapa, not a palapa.
No, I'm trying to get rid of my child right now.
Okay, fair enough.
What are we talking about?
While Ehrlich is overseeing the construction of this palapa, he sends Jin Yang to do what you said, Brian, to scrub the internet for those food pictures. And Jin Yang, not being the best at taking orders or enjoying doing scut work, he blows the rest of the money on a Corvette despite Ehrlich, and then he goes on strike. This then sends Ehrlich to Big Head's class to recruit all these students to look for food pictures, but they're a smart bunch of kids, and they figure it all out and form their own seafood with funding.
They just watched
Jesse Eisenberg in The Social Network do exactly that to the Winklevi.
On Big Head's suggestion, and Big Head is so proud of them, which is like...
And they seem to really like Big Head as a professor as well.
Well, they obviously probably all just got wealthy off him, so.
Yeah.
Palapa, by the way, is an open-sided dwelling with a thatched roof made of dried palm leaves. It is useful in hot weather and therefore common in Mexican beaches such as Acapulco. That's very specific.
Okay. So a giant hut was pretty much right on. All right.
So to wrap this up, Ehrlich then sells his share in seafood for the palapa and the car, which he immediately learns that he cannot pull off. And then Jin Yang sells the not a hot dog technology to Periscope. Periscope being what? A video app?
Yeah, Periscope is Twitter's live video.
Okay, I understand. A place in desperate need of a dick filter, which they're going to use not a hot dog as. And while Dinesh is still tied to seafood, he ends the episode having to scrub the internet, not for food pictures, but for dick pictures. So he's fallen pretty far in the last couple episodes.
Going from the slick hair to dick pics.
Yeah, a month's worth of dick pics.
A year.
Was it a year?
It was a year.
Yeah, it's a year. My question is, the actual hot dog, not a hot dog app, is like how many people have taken dick pics? And do they, and whoever made that app, do they have them stored somewhere? Like, is this...
We'll start with this.
The show planted the idea in all these people's heads in the first place. So
right, and then gives them the
Brian, app. How many people in your house have done that?
I briefly considered it, but then I didn't go through with it.
Well, I'm downloading and popping John shower tomorrow morning, so that's
a good thing. I don't wake up until after you leave for work.
I did notice, because I think the people who made this app thought of this, when you take a picture with the app, you click on share, like on your phone, and you share it, and then it just says whether you got hot dog or not a hot dog. It doesn't actually share the image that you took. Because I think they're trying to keep people from sending.
What? You're not just walking around with your laptop and your covered webcam, and you just take the tape off the webcam, take the picture, and then send it from there. I mean, this is confusing to me.
I have a modern Polaroid. I took a picture. I went to Walgreens.
It's not hot dog again.
I scanned it at Walgreens, uploaded it to an SD card, plugged it in my computer, then sent it via Gmail to you there, John. It's a long process.
Okay. Thank you so much.
Some lady just came in here and stole my child.
The Russians are on it. They've alerted the people to send out the Amber Alerts. So, real world similarities. I don't have anything for this episode, Brian. You mentioned the recognition tech.
Yeah, we've exhausted that one. So, at one point, Bachman's real upset about AWS, which would be Amazon Web Services, which is their hosting side where they make a ton of money. And Jeff Bezos, did I miss something on why he's so upset with Amazon?
I think that's just for people in the know. I am not in the know. I have no idea what he was talking about there.
Okay, so it's like it's trying to be a tech joke. It's not necessarily like something, a plot point in any way.
No, I don't think so.
Okay, all right. And I want to add something. The Monica storyline. So her boss is supposed to be like this incredibly smart lady, and she doesn't understand anything that happened and how Monica or the new guy handled it. And I feel like that plot is an episode of Everybody Loves Raymond, just some weird misunderstanding that the viewers are just like, this is so dumb.
You're right. I think that might be a little beneath her character, but she also is.
She threw money at seafood in the first place. And I think with her, and this probably would have happened with Peter Gregory as well at some point. She's this very mechanical,
she's an humorless
person. Yeah, she's an Excel sheet. She doesn't account for the human factor, which I'm sure is a large part of VC acquisition, just like anything else.
I don't know. I just felt like it was just like a 90s sitcom watching her misunderstand the situation. It was so dumb. So, anyway.
Oh, I actually do have a real life
thing. Sure.
I actually don't add notes. Because fuck you, John.
You just single space him in the first place.
Yeah, drive you crazy. So, Richard starts a fire in Gavin Belson's house.
Yes.
I just want to share his time when I started a fire, because I've done that.
Okay.
I have a big green egg, and I improperly disposed of the ashes one evening. Thank God it had been raining for about 12 hours straight. I thought all the ashes were out, put them in a brown bag. We left for 4 hours. Came home, usually the first thing I would do is let the dogs out, and I would open up the door, and they would ran right into an inferno, which would have been great.
It depends on which dog ran out first.
But yeah, usually Dingo.
Then it would have been pretty good. You couldn't have stuffed him, most likely, after.
Yeah, which is unfortunate. Or could I? I mean, that would have been better. A little charred Dingo. Instead, we're like, you know what sounds good? Ice cream. And so we take the dog with the dog. We're like, well, we'll bring the dogs with us. We let them out the front door. And the fire is in the back. So, and we walk outside, we're like, boy, someone's got a nice fire going. We should get one going. Dumbasses go to the ice cream place, come back. And then I'm like, something's not right. And look out, my deck is on fire. Like, there's like an 8-foot ring of my deck slowly smoldering. And I was like, oh, Blair, call the fire department. And just ran outside. It was dark out. Couldn't see the edge of the porch. I just I don't know where the steps are exactly. I'm going to take faith that where my foot's going down next is going to be it. Now, I got pretty good hand-eye coordination and spatial capabilities, and I fucking missed by 3 feet. Just went straight down in mud. Got the hose going. Blair didn't even call 911. She actually called the actual fire department.
That's smart.
And they're like, where did you get this number? She's like, Google. Like, you should call 911 in case of fire. And they sent him over there. They sent a fire department over there, and they was like, "You guys are pretty stupid. Just keep running your hose. It's fine."
Not quite.
Good story.
Not quite in the spirit of the real world similarities section, but that could have happened to some.
If you're careless, some VC with embers and fires, you could set something on fire.
Yeah.
I just want that to be a warning for everyone out there.
As true today as it was.
Dispose of ashes. Don't do it in a paper bag.
So, favorite moments. We've got two written down here, and Shane's going to surprise us with whatever his is, because, again, he doesn't write things down. Both Jared. Jared is clearly the MVP of this season so far. At the end of his, and this is going to melt into Brian's as well, but at the end of Jared's threatening anyone that would cross Richard, theoretical threatening, probably real threatening as well, I buy it. He ends it by saying, "It feels good to laugh again," which is such an old-timey line, but it's made its way into so many modern shows. I just love that line. It's a winner. It's going to get a laugh out of me every time.
I mean, the whole, like, the way he gets specific, "I'll kill them with knives, I'll kill them with guns." I mean, that is the best part of the episode. I don't know. I'll have something different. But
those are still like normal lines, but when my favorite was when he says, "I'll talk them into suicide." who has ever said that? I've never heard anything remotely close to that. That was
fantastic. And the hardest we laughed was when he actually said,
"This is not the Jared."
Yeah, last week he referred to me as Frankenstein's bulimic daughter.
This is the first in Silicon VP history, long and illustrious though it may be, where we all arrive at the same character generating our favorite moments of the week.
I mean, I'm such a contrarian, but so it drives me nuts that we all agree on this shit, but it's just money. Character's money.
Veep has been able to get its supporting characters Emmy nominations and Emmys. Zach Woods should get a push this year from HBO. He should get the official endorsement.
Is that...
That's the act of the place, Jared.
I do have one thing to add before we move on. Sorry, I texted our tech expert who said he's actually willing to come on next week.
Okay.
Hooli is a combination of Google and Apple.
Okay. So we were mostly right.
Yeah.
We stuffed Amazon in there too.
Yeah.
Do we really need our tech expert? Clearly we know what we're talking about.
Yeah. Obviously. Well, he texted me. He said it was going to be Micah F. and three guys talking about... Silicon Valley and like,
well, you know,
come on, man.
We'll put it in the hopper. I mean, we appreciated Brad Kay's contributions last week, but nothing came of it. We're still holding out. We'll decide soon. Probably. So that's this week's episode of Silicon Valley. We'll revisit at the end of this podcast episode with who won the week. But first, we're going to talk about the episode of Veep that aired on Sunday entitled Chicklet, named for Selena's horse. This episode is a deep dive into Selena's history, probably more than we've ever really known about her, which I think is great news for the season that had seemed perhaps a little aimless. I think it gives Selena a path forward going through however long the series goes. This is season 6, and I expect it to run for like another season or two at most. So like, if she goes on a quest for self-knowledge or something like that, just becomes a better person, if that's the route the show takes, then great. And this was like a solid first start as she comes to like some eureka moments in her past. She's in a therapeutic mood, depressed after her heart attack, but resistant to like official therapy due to her stay at the spa in the period between the end of last season and the start of this season. So instead of going to a therapist and admitting that she has a problem, she just vents about her childhood to Mike, who needs this data anyways for the book that they're writing together. And through a long series of scenes in which she first is resistant to talking about her father, but then learns more about who he actually was through her uncle, she realizes that she had idolized him based on false pretenses, and they were never disabused because he died before he could like really fuck up with her. And then she also realizes that the mother that she hated was always the good, or at least the better parent, and that she is doing the exact same thing with Catherine and Andrew. the disgusting character of Andrew re-entering the picture is never going to bode well for an episode, but I think in that context, drawing those parallels, that's... And he was only in it for one scene, too, which I think is great, because, again, I can't stand that character. But he comes and he goes, just to make that point.
All right, so you mentioned going into Selena and, you know, telling her story and feeling... maybe feeling better about her, she changes. She was still awful. And so I don't know a lot about clinical depression. And I didn't want to bring this up in Silicon Valley, but you talked about Gavin Belson being depressed and getting angry. I don't know that those are the same two things.
No, Gavin's going through grief. Selena might actually be going through a depression here.
But so if people are depressed, are they that mean? I always thought they kind of just like sunk into themselves. But she's just still awful. Yeah, I even made a list of all her awful things this time.
It depends on who the person is as well and how they're raised. I mean, you can be depressed and be a kind person still. It's all over the board. Gavin Belson's going through grief. That's it. He's angry, like whatever the... that's the only step I know, five steps of grief apparently.
Which, you know, not really a thing, is my understanding of it anyways.
Well, it's a generality, yeah. It's like psychology.
Yes. Soft science.
Soft science.
You could lay your head on that science and have a nice long sleep.
I mean, but if we go into astrology, that really explains it.
It almost did a spit take. This is an HBO show. Foundational HBO show, The Sopranos, you know, Tony being in therapy. Tony spent pretty much that entire series in a state of depression. And in one of his therapy sessions, his psychologist said to him that depression is rage turned inward, which I always thought was a good line, whether it being true or not. But as far as Selena's particular behavior, if she is depressed, I mean, I'm sure a part of that is wanting to make people around you feel as bad as you do. And also... if depression is a form of self-hatred, then it's a way of ensuring that you're alone to dwell in your self-hatred. Like, I deserve to be alone. I will make others leave me alone of being terrible to them. And it's like a self-reinforcing thing potentially. So, I mean, I don't think she's any more awful than she usually is. It's not been a good season integrity-wise for Selena, no question.
Right. This time she votes against, she's on that board meeting for whatever that pharmaceutical is, and she votes against discount prescriptions for either the elderly or poor people or something like that.
Yes. After voting for price increases for cancer drugs and for continued animal testing.
Right.
Which this is a responsible thing to her, to the people who own that stock.
That's true. Yes and no. We can talk about it in real world similarities. Brian, you've written a note about Catherine being snowed by Andrew. In the context of Selena writing a pass to her father, and we see how awful his behavior was throughout her life the period of her life when her father was alive. It's unclear exactly when she died, but it seemed like 10, 11, 12, somewhere in there. She acts the same way towards her father. So I think it's not forgivable, like it sucks, but just because... Catherine, or because Selena is around more, maybe she's just the focus of any resentment that Catherine has, whereas Andrew gets to swoop in and be the good father, and then swoop out again.
I feel like this is just like episodes of Loveline just put on TV. It's exactly what everyone would call in about, like, oh, I keep being attracted to this guy, and he's an alcoholic, and he yells at me, and they're like, what was up with your dad? Is he an alcoholic? You're like, how'd you know? Like, boom, done and done. It's cyclical.
Brain, see, you
your brain is garbage.
Dumb. That's stupid.
You guys misinterpreted Econ Brian's version of this terribly. I was simply referring to her ability to manage money.
I think she has so much money, it doesn't make any difference. It's not meaningful to her.
I know. This is where, like, I need grounded sometimes. And, like, because both her and Mike are investing with him. And we're in, like, the post-Madoff world, the post-economic collapse. Mm-hmm. Like, do people still invest
with individuals?
With individuals? with shady schemes in the Brazilian jungle or whatever he's doing.
I would assume Mike so. Especially has a history of terrible investments. Like he was trying to unload a boat for an entire season, yeah. <That's> if not many seasons. So the treatment of women is extra pronounced this week, like in the way that Catherine and Selena treat their mothers as opposed to their awful fathers, where their anger and their resentment is directed at people that they should be allied with against the pieces of shit men in their lives. And then the whole saga with Selena's wax figure. Is anyone pretending to buttfuck the Chinese president that Selena is bowing next to? Is anyone putting their dick in FDR's hand at the Madame Tussauds? It's just so disgusting. Like, yeah, sure, you were the leader of the free world, but I can humiliate you with my penis.
If there's a wax figure in Donald Trump, are you going to humiliate with your penis?
And no, I wouldn't use my dick to humiliate someone. I might end up humiliating me.
Especially when I take a picture, it says hot dog.
I watched The Handmaid's Tale after this episode, and yeah, the misogyny in both this show and that show melded together in my mind to the point where I had like a rage headache after. Selena is not a good, she was not a good president, but she followed another bad president who is nominated for the Supreme Court, who has his library, who gets to take pictures with former presidents. Just the difference in how, I think accurately, the show treats both of those characters. And like Laura Montez is eventually going to get her statue in Madame Tussauds, and someone's going to put a dick in her hand too. Unless they encase her in a glass enclosure to prevent anyone from doing exactly that. Another piece of shit XY specimen is Jonah, who's getting in deeper and deeper with Tans. He's now fucking Tans's daughter. I feel like her name is Sheena or something like that.
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay. Shasta?
I don't know.
I feel like I'm just naming sodas now.
Fanta. Her name's definitely Fanta.
The daughter initially is frosty to Jonah, but his idea of a psych-up speech is to go to her and say, I've overcome all of this adversity in my life. I was a premature baby. I didn't hit puberty until I was 19. I had a third grade reading level in 10th grade. It's like Jonah's heard psych-up speeches before, and like he's seen moments in movies where a character talks about all the adversity they've had to face in their life and look at where they are now. But Jonah's specific scenario is far too weird to be sympathetic. Like I have more questions than like, oh wow.
The speech worked on me because it was like that came from somewhere for Jonah. That was great.
That was my favorite Jonah scene, I think, that we've had. Like him yelling that at her, I thought that was great. That was the highlight of the whole episode for me.
We also learned that he sleeps in his office, as congressmen do, apparently. The ones that don't like live in giant fraternity houses together, which is also a real thing. The rest of them, I guess, just are unfold a futon and give themselves horse baths in the bathroom while they go vote on meaningful legislation after they're done with all that.
I used to refer, sometimes I would give our child horse baths, and Blair was very offended. What I would describe it.
I mean, if we're talking about the Sopranos, I mean, there were horse baths in the Sopranos.
I don't know what you're talking about.
It's splashing some water on sensitive parts in the sink.
Yeah. Oh. Gabbing around maybe with a washcloth. Yeah. Basically what I did to an older child.
You got
to
get
fine. Moving. Bedtime's important.
Well, yeah. Hell yeah. But apparently it's not appropriate to refer to that with your wife. Oh. And at church. Whatever.
Fair enough. A Mary Magdalene bath is more acceptable for the Methodists. So, continuing on with church-appropriate topics, Richard is the next sperm candidate for Catherine and Marjorie.
As much as I like the speech that Jared gave, I don't like this relationship with the daughter. It's too cliche for comedy. That's like, to me, that's whatever. Like, oh, I get it. She dominates him and she's going to tell him what to do all the time. And he's going to listen. Like, I get the contention it's going to cause with with Kent
mm-hmm.
and as a Ben
mm-hmm.
later on, but it's cliche.
I'm with you. I love the speech, but don't like the relationship.
Yeah, I don't mind. Yeah, I don't even mind them fucking. But like,
I think it's certainly something Jonah would do, and I think it's certainly something a daughter of Tans would do. Like this, she is a congressman now, essentially.
Yeah. I don't know. I could have gone somewhere. I just like, and they get that. It all makes. I'm not saying it doesn't make sense, but when you're talking about a show that's typically AA minus level. It's kind of a B minus storyline.
What grade would you give the Richard as sperm candidate for Catherine and Marjorie?
A plus.
Because as long as we're learning about people's backstories and their histories in this show, we needed to learn more about the Splett family history. Deeply.
Grandma Splett.
He'll just... We learn that Richard has never masturbated before in his life, has no idea what to do in a sperm bank, and needs Catherine to walk him through the process as far as what to do with the cup. How many cups should he fill? Is he going to hell if he does
this? That line was fantastic. How many do I fill?
That's great. Whoever came out, that was really touching. Like, you have to touch base with basically your 10-year-old self to come up with that entire scene of what Richard is asking. That's pre-sex ed. So that's pre, like, what, fourth grade?
I think, doesn't he ask, will it hurt?
Yeah, like, all these are questions that are probably someone's asking in third grade.
Yeah, like, the trend in sex ed classes now, apparently, is to have kids, like, write anonymous questions.
Yeah.
It's like the writer's got just a stack of those.
It's fantastic. Blair does that with her youth group. Or older questions,
mm-hmm.
but and I've actually sat it in as one of those. Like I've sat it in on
as one of those askers, or
Claire. How many? Anyway, no, it's one of the expert analysts, and I was definitely what I would describe as the least Christian in the room.
Sure.
So I expounded upon some answers a little more than some others may have.
We're euphemism heavy, perhaps.
Yes.
So, returning to the world of TV news, we've got another great news parody in which a giant food attempt, Dan and his co-host are reporting on one that has gone horribly wrong, which I feel like happens all the time. Like, people getting rolled up and burned alive in giant omelets or something like that.
What was it? I don't even remember that.
I can't remember.
I don't know what you're talking about either.
The correspondent that his co-host... Yeah, the correspondent that his co-host is concerned about replacing her.
Right.
She's introduced giving a story about this attempt to make a giant food item that has gone horribly wrong.
I remember pancakes it's worth going mentioned, back, but I didn't
I
know.
I think that must have been what it was in that case.
Giant
that,
like, food item.
Some dumb town was trying to make a giant stack of pancakes. And I don't know, someone drowned in the batter or something, which I find hilarious. Not quite as hilarious as... reading hurting your daughter's self-esteem or whatever it was from last week. But this is on par with that. Dan is getting tired of the rumors about him and his co-host, especially because he describes having sex with a woman over 30 as exploring the cave in the intro of Raiders of the Lost Ark. Meanwhile, his co-host needs those rumors to continue because if she is not seen as fuckable by the audience, she'll be replaced by the reporter talking about giant food attempts gone horribly wrong. And then we learn that she is putting the rumors out herself. This is probably the most sympathetic that character has been since she's been introduced. Just fully cognizant of, again, the misogyny in her choice of employment, her choice of profession.
Sorry, I didn't yes and you on this one, man. I fucked up.
No, it's okay.
I failed.
It's okay. It's fine.
Brian, have you worked on those improv classes yet or what?
I don't know what you're talking about.
So yes.
Yes and, Brian. Yes and.
I don't know. I still, that's a thing. Yes and.
The last couple of things I want to mention, some local, some things that are pertinent to our lives. Got specific shout outs in this episode, like the Carter Library that I visit here in Atlanta on Freedom Parkway, like once a week while their author series is going on. That got a shout out for being the home of a sanctimonious prick or whatever Selena called President Carter.
Yeah, which is the exact opposite.
And also, we're all Indiana boys, and one of our own old popcorn homo got a shout out. Famous popcorn magnate Orville Redenbacher from Indiana. I mean, to quote Parks and Recreation, there's not a lot of famous people from Indiana. So whenever any of them get mentioned in any capacity, we feel especially privileged.
We really do.
Yeah.
But New Yorkers do this as well, but there are a lot more people from New York. So, like, it's really odd that they do it. We're just like, yeah, hell yeah, we got Larry Bird.
The first person from New York I thought of was Woody Allen, and I tried to think of a similar name for him as Old Popcorn Homo, and I immediately walked it back because it cannot end well.
Good
call. I'm going to keep that inside.
When we watch, I watch things now or read books, and things from Illinois are mentioned. I'm always like, oh, that's neat. I'm from Illinois. But then I realized that Chicago is the third largest city in the country, and they base a lot of stuff around there. And so it's not a big deal. There's just constant stuff. I know what it's like for people from California, New York, and Florida. You're mentioned all the time. It's nice.
Still might be coming to Iowa in a couple of weeks, Brian. We're not sure yet. I think I was talking with the urologist today, talking about issues that I'd never have talked about for a workers' compensation case. So
really burying the lead there.
I mean, you can.
I went to see the urologist 20 seconds later.
Think, like, it's not really stuff you'd think would be a work injury. So I'm like if you have carpal tunnel, I know how to evaluate your case. You have specific urological issues? I have no fucking idea. No idea. By the way, Viagra is like $40 a pill.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
There's so many different varieties. That's the generic.
That's for generic.
Holy shit. I did not know that.
Yeah.
Okay. So, well, this plays into our real-world similarities with the Pharmaceutical Corporate Board. I am a stockholder in some pharmaceutical companies, and one of the questions was about animal testing. This is not specific to the pharmaceutical industry. It's like this happens with all kinds of industries. Like whenever it's time to vote every year about the board and whatever amendments that stockholders want to propose, PETA always buys shares in pharmaceutical companies just so they can propose a question asking for a ban on animal testing. And presumably because they do it every year, they've had minimal success in doing so. Which is odd because I can get on board with that. It's one of the few things I would agree with PETA on.
No animal testing?
It's a waste of time.
I used to fuck with everyone in middle school and high school about that. I like just purposely troll them, be like, "Yeah, I'm for animal testing. Who cares about monkeys?" Golly, but like you just pick the girl who's like really obsessed with unicorns and dogs.
Sure.
And just
two like, fake things.
Right. And it's like, yeah, what dog? Who cares about dogs? They're not sentient. Who cares?
This was like your playground taunts. Dogs, yes. Aren't sentient.
So, yeah, I mean, yes. Yeah, I have a lot of friends.
Okay, yeah, I wouldn't think so. SAT words. I actually did have third grade Shane.
The last day of high school, I actually had a guy say to me, "We would have hung out with you more if you weren't such a jackass."
Well, we'll never see each other.
Yeah,
again,
yeah, so. Exactly. So I was like, okay, that's cool. I am a jackass. That's fine. But.
It would be good if pharmaceutical companies, biotech companies, tested on human cells as we're getting better and better at growing and cloning those.
Don't you think they're going to start doing that more, though?
That would be nice, but if animal testing is a shortcut and humans are not rats and rats are not humans, things work differently.
Are you telling me that the scientific study that my paralegal was citing today about cancer in rat bellies from aspartame?
No, it's nonsense. Without you reading the paper, it's nonsense.
That's actually a study.
It has no bearing on anything.
I totally
agree. What about the new Planet of the Apes movies?
We talked about it in our soon-to-be-released 2017 summer preview.
Those are shockingly good. Like, I love the update to that series. So good.
I have yet to see the second one, but I would like to. And the next time it comes back to HBO, I consider picking it for a Munich movie.
Oh, that would have been a great choice.
Oh, well, I probably chose White God or something instead. Hungarian.
It was okay.
Hungarian canine revolt.
Lots of dogs. Should be tested.
That's absolutely right. They would have avoided these problems. They killed so many people in that movie.
It is sentient, by the way, not sentient. Or is it or is it both?
I'd probably say sentient.
You say
it's because it's less syllables.
Hardman?
The sentient?
You say sentient?
Oh, yeah. Why would you say the other thing? That doesn't make any sense.
Less syllables.
It rhymes with our...
Yeah, John's retired.
Less syllables from
John
the double
space
John
is a man of leisure.
Guy.
There's no time for the extra syllable.
I need ease of reading more than I need an extra breath in a sentence. So further real world similarities.
Hold on. I'm gonna play
so
it here
further...
on my phone.
Wait.
Did you hear it? Did it come through?
No. This is a good pod.
It is sentient.
This is just Siri's opinion.
It's just sentient.
It's sad. Sentient.
Sentient.
There's no hard T or whatever in the middle there.
There we go.
In high school, my high school girlfriend and I got into an argument of how you say sherbet and sherbet.
Or what is that second?
It's written sherbet.
No.
On the
false.
Container, is it not?
It's sherbet as it's spelled. But everyone says sherbet. And we got this argument, and I was like, it's definitely sherbet. That's what everyone says. Who cares how it's spelled? And she's like, no, it's sherbet. And I asked my friends, I was like, well, your friends suck. And so I was like, let's go to the dictionary. Guess what the dictionary says?
I don't know.
Both.
Sherbet. No.
Cool.
And then you learn something that you will future. And then you learn something that in the future you would tell youth group kids about.
Yes. Wait, what? No. But I was like, hey, we're both right. And she said, no, you're still wrong. And to this day, she still will message me occasionally or put a post on my face, about Facebook, saying how wrong.
On your face.
On my face. I was fucked up. And the tattoo
she
on my
face.
She
just materializes in the night.
I don't think it's both.
With the phonetic explanation.
Because I always say it with an R.
Yeah.
It's there's variants less commonly sherbet, but that's
nonsense. More common. Yes, yes. maybe it's a Midwestern thing. Any of our fans out in the Northeast or the West?
Saskatchewan, maybe.
Saskatchewan?
In Canada?
Fuck Canada. We don't need their opinion on this.
Baja California province?
I can't.
We're transnational now.
Yeah, all right. Back in. You have your gravy fries. You're fine, me.
I will contact my family in upstate New York.
All right. Fantastic. We've got.
We'll get an update next podcast.
The old Sherbert update.
This is at least as exciting as whether or not I died from food poisoning last week.
I'm actually more. I'm more into this one. This has been argument. So I've loaned you.
If the dictionary didn't convince her, then some like friend of a friend of a friend in upstate New York isn't going to do it either.
20 years of
what is their last name Webster?
But it's 20 years
in New York.
A lot of people say yeah.
It's weird. First name Miriam.
But I've only known
that
you.
Is weird.
So I've known you guys 15 years. This argument like predates you, in my book.
This argument's going to fucking bear me if we keep talking about sherbet. When we could be talking about
John,
the salary of board seats, which is what I want to talk about for further real-world similarities, which I pretty much just knocked out. Board seats, popular occupation for former congressmen, former senators. New York Times did a study. More than 45% of former senators serve on a public board, senators that have left office since 1992, that is. Presumably you could do as little work as Selena does with them. Pay an average of $251,000 a year.
Isn't that why Evan Bayh quit being a senator? Is to serve on like Lilly's board or something like that?
I feel like he served on several boards after he got out. Like he's the classic example of the revolving door. And our last real world similarity. Pork barrel politics comes up in this episode with Jonah. Kent and Ben want him to just go along to get along, make an ally, potentially earn a favor by voting for something in someone else's district that will create jobs there, like 300 jobs. Whereas his lady Rasputin says, fuck those people. We'll look good in your district by ostensibly being against waste. And Jonah being Jonah, of course, votes with Shauna, Shawnee, whatever Tanz's daughter's name is.
Fanta.
Fanta, yes. Old Sierra Mist isn't a fan of pork barrel politics. No more pork barrel spending in Congress. It's kind of fucked the political process a little bit.
I think that's like the catalyst to what has created the, I don't know, exceedingly high partisanship and shutting things down. Is that not everybody gets what they want.
Like the smoke-filled back rooms aren't attractive necessarily, but are they better than what we now see the alternative is, just nonstop deadlock and ideological hardening? Like, I don't think so. So we can thank John McCain and later the Tea Party for that. I like
John McCain. Thanks, Tea Party. Yeah. You like John McCain? Don't
I do. Say. Like, he made the better part of his career, like the pre-2008 part of his career, I think is admirable. But a big part of it was rallying against pork barrel spending.
Well, his Twitter career consists of saying one thing and then voting the exact opposite way. Yes. Shane retweets stuff that like that all like, the time. And it's glorious.
Well, he's so full of shit at this
point. He is, he's like, yes.
President should not do that. Cool, what are you going to do about it?
All right.
President just shouldn't do it. That's all.
Hey, that's John McCain's a maverick.
Yeah, that's right.
He had a bus with Maverick written on it. You can't write Maverick on a bus if you're not a Maverick. I think that's a law.
Maybe he just like borrowed it from the movie. Bus.
but Mel Gibson, that's why he lost the election, because Mel Gibson's picture was on the side of it. Yeah, he's like, ooh, this is bad timing.
He got that. He realized he could say what he wanted to, but no one pays attention when he's voting. Like, that's it.
I don't know if there's anything to vote on still.
All these confirmation hearings.
Yeah, all the confirmation, 100% all the confirmation hearings. Like, all the garbage that was nominated, he didn't vote against any of them. He just spoke out against them.
Right. I think he'll be like, I have questions about what Jeff Sessions' history has said about him. But he could go ahead and be attorney general, yeah,
exactly.
Of course.
Yeah, that's exactly what he did. There's another guy on Twitter who always tweets out John McCain, anti-McCain stuff. His name's Dylan M. And I think he's my Twitter twin. And he's from Indiana.
There was a period of time when John McCain was awesome. That period is not now.
No.
That's acceptable.
He's just a politician. It is what it is.
He's certainly not a hero. I like heroes that don't get captured personally.
Oh, yeah, right, yeah. Forgot about that.
That so was favorite, mean.
That was just...
Well, that's our president now.
Oh, so, yeah, that's not you. That's our president. Yes. Our hero for our children.
Favorite moments from this episode of Veep. The scene where Selena is flipping out on her dad's cabin, and she demands that Mike join her. His like impotent rage unleashing itself is pretty great. First, pay me, bitch. And she's like, yeah, that bitch should pay you.
Yeah.
But she doesn't understand what Mike's talking about. And then he continues to rage against his like middle age problems. Like, why do I wait so long to pee? Why do I eat when I'm full?
Yeah, I'm a grown man. I'm a grown man.
Why do shoes cost so much? Why do dresses cost so much?
The why do I eat when I'm full line, that was my highlight for the week as well.
I did that today. Why was I doing it? I was just munching. Yeah, I was in my office yesterday, crushing beef jerky immediately after eating a Jimmy John's sub.
You think if we mention Your DeKalb Farmer's Market on air, they would give us, like, discounts?
I don't know. Please, Your DeKalb Farmer's Market, please sponsor us.
All right, Media Community Club. Let's just jump the gun. This has been the Media Community Club podcast, sponsored by Your DeKalb Farmer's Market.
Yeah, why not?
They have really good focaccia bread.
Oh,
they've got really good everything.
The focaccia bread is fantastic.
I will say, I hope this doesn't ruin our sponsorship. I bought a bag of red potatoes from there recently. And when I went to open them, one had gone like totally soft to where like if I had stuck my thumb in it, I feel like it would have exploded in a cloud of spores. Mm. It smelled like every dog's anal gland releasing at the same time. It was
bad.
How
my prom night ended.
So you had nothing to offer those youth groupers. Brian, what was your favorite moment from this episode of Veep?
I have a note on here where Richard says, I think you're going to be really surprised, but I don't know what that's from now. I write these things down.
I count on you remembering. I do not.
I think it was the opening scene, but I don't remember either. I just kind of vaguely remember.
He just has so many asides that don't always come through, which I think is good and right, because he's a very much background character who's just stuck in this upside down world of amorality when he, you know, doesn't like to give himself the devil's handshake. So he's right to be off in the corner just saying things, but it would be nice to catch everything he says, and this might very well have been one of those where I just missed it.
I didn't miss it. I just didn't write down the context.
Shane, what was your favorite moment?
The correct answer is Mike's rage, but I'm going to add in Kent utilizing the Kinko's lady who specializes in juveniles for, yeah. So he
goes to Kinko's and the woman there makes a lot of educational material for preschoolers.
That's right. That's right.
And this is how he's able to teach Jenna things now.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I love Kent. I'm all on Kent. That's my favorite character is this whole thing.
His screen time and Ben's screen time is way down since they got put with Jonah. Back when they were like chiefs of staff or special advisors to Selena when she was the president, you just got Kent and Ben overload. And that's not a bad thing either. Like they were just around for more or less every scene. Miss those guys. And if it means Jonah taking up more screen time, I'm certainly pro that as well. I still think they're all going to reunite at some point in the season for like a big project. It absolutely does. Dan seems the furthest away, but I don't know. Maybe he could interview all of them about it. Who knows? So who won the week? I will not go first on this one.
I think it's easy. It's Silicon Valley.
Okay.
I'm with you. Selena has worn me down.
I think this was a great episode of Veep. I think it's one of the best episodes of Veep. It wasn't the funniest necessarily, but I think as far as just really figuring out who these characters are, less as joke machines and more as like functioning people, it really, really worked on me. And I think
discounting Jared growing up in a group home, Jared guy died.
It's only going to work. We're going to learn a little bit more and more about Jared every week, but we're never going to like get into his actual psychology, his like Freudian way that he's lived his life. It's always just going to be those Richard Splett little asides, which is fine, but it's just not the same. It's not the same. In conjunction,
win though.
No.
Yes.
They are leading now. It's 2-1 with a Bernie Madoff trailer pulling up the rear.
Well, Bernie Madoff trailer Silicon Valley tied with Veep. They both
Yes. I feel like we're.
Oh, no, I guess he tied.
No, that's right. This is our fourth episode.
Veep. Yeah, you're right.
Tied last week, and then Silicon Valley gets it this week.
I think Silicon Valley had a win previously.
It did not. I went against. It did. I switched it up. It did not.
Well, there's an easy way to figure this problem out.
I'll bet above average fan Dave knows.
He might.
He's probably got an Excel sheet. He keeps on his phone in the car.
I think you guys are nuts. Veep all the way this week.
Good episode. Shauna.
I have no problem with that. It works with the characters. The characters would do
it. It's cliche. It's not that interesting. Jonah's interesting. That's not that interesting. I get it. She's going to lead him around and do whatever she wants. Got it. Okay.
Fair enough.
Shane, what have you been watching?
Zootopia, over and over again.
That's disappointing. I didn't really like that one.
Well, we switched from Angry Birds to Zootopia, so.
I haven't seen Angry Birds yet.
Yeah, you know who's an angry bird right now? John Kissinger.
John. We got Jane Storks for her birthday. She loves that movie. Okay. It's got its cute moments.
Yeah.
That movie didn't review horribly, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it's got some wolves that are kind of funny in it.
I don't think it reviewed as well as Trolls, which is the statement of the year as far as movies that you thought were going to be terrible being apparently okay.
I haven't seen that yet.
Been watching more Justified.
Deadwood, 100 years later. Right, same characters.
Right. And by the way, awful news about Powers Booth. Too sad. Like, if you would have said, we can't make next season, you can't make the Deadwood movie because someone passed away, it would have been Ian McShane, right? He's,
I feel like Jim Beaver, well, he's already dead. Jim Beaver, who played Ellsworth, not a problem there.
Oh, man.
He's dead?
I mean, his character.
I was like, wait, what? But he was just in the episode of Justified I was watching the other day. Jim Beaver was.
Yes. Of course, because they just transported this whole show to Kentucky.
Which is great.
So Shane, have you seen Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them?
No.
Shockingly terrible. I had mediocre hopes and it didn't even hit them. Not even close. It's not worth your time.
So that'll do us for this episode of Silicon VP / VPC. Check us out on the internet at MediaCommovie.club. We are discussing An Unmarried Woman at the moment from 1978, Paul Mazursky movie. We've got a classic of old Hollywood, Sunset Boulevard, directed by Billy Wilder. universally praised as one of the great all-time movies, all-time American movies. So I look forward to watching that. That's on Netflix. On our side pieces tab, we've got a lot of good reviews for movies last year. We've got A Bigger Splash. We've got Jackie. That recently went up. We've got a review for Ghostbusters. Staying current, we've got a review of Guardians of the Galaxy 2. And I'm planning on seeing Alien Covenant tomorrow night also. So there might be a review for that by the time this podcast gets out to the listeners. Like us on Facebook, Media Movie Club. Follow us on Twitter, Media Movie Club. Thanks for joining me tonight, guys.
Thanks, John.
See ya.
Good night.